allow the soothing music and uplifting affirmations to center your heart and mind in an awareness of God's love.
Wake up, my dear sinners. Wake up from your deep rest. Won't you say your prayers and know that you are blessed? I love you, oh, but Jesus loves you the best. And I hope that you choose your own religion.
What's going on, sinners and choosers? Welcome to Choose Your Own Religion. My name is Joe, and welcome back. If you're coming back to us, if this is your first time tuning in, this is the show about our religious stuff we had as kids. For me, I was a preacher's kid of a Presbyterian minister, a great guy, still fond of him, not necessarily falling under his umbrella, but still a great, cool dad. And it's also talking about where we're going now, what kind of spirituality, or in the case of today's episode, what kind of skepticism we have. What are we prioritizing? And for some of us, it is rationality. I think a lot of us want to believe we prioritize rationality. And this is an interesting episode exploring that concept. And I'm so happy to have Luke Jensen on the show. We discovered on the course of this, Luke grew up Lutheran. So he didn't grow up exactly as me. And Lutherans are they're the OG Protestants, right? And we just discovered, as you'll hear, like we had very eerily similar paths to get to LA to do comedy, coming from our sort of religion and then our sort of our default life options that we had. And well, this show is about not just doing the default shit, but about choosing your own thing. And no rambling preamble on this episode from me. If you want to check out some of my rants, I did one for Easter Sunday last week that you can check out. Maybe I'll do more in the future. If you like this show, I don't know how you're consuming it, but we're on iTunes, we're on Stitcher. You can go to chooseyourownreligion.com. Thank you to Das Fiesta for leaving a review recently. And it was really sweet and touching. I would love to hear any more reviews anybody has. It's really cool making internet friends. So anyway, on to the show. For more Luke Jensen, he has a podcast on documentaries that we talk about, where everybody, you watch a documentary and then talk about the documentary. It's called What Did You Learn? He co-hosts it with Monica Scott. It's also on iTunes and Stitcher. Should search for that. And he's also part of a great sketch team called Hush Money, which I have the links in the description, but they're on YouTube and Funny or Die if you just Google Hush Money. Lots of good shit there. And that's it, y'all. Please welcome Luke Jensen, and please prepare yourself to hear the rule of Jah.
So we're in it now.
We're in it now.
Okay,
I mean,
great.
Let's say, worst case scenario, you drop just some kind of truth bomb you weren't ready to drop in the next 30 seconds. We'll just bump it 30 seconds later.
Look, I watched Zeitgeist a week ago, so.
Is that for part of your podcast?
It was, yeah.
Yeah. So tell me what made you want, it's called What Did You Learn, right?
Yeah.
Which, when I hear that, I hear it in like a teacher voice, like, what did you learn?
Like a kid that got in trouble, yeah.
Yeah. What inspired you to do one about documentaries?
Well, it was Monica's idea.
Okay.
Monica Scott,
mm-hmm.
My mortal enemy, for those of you who don't know. Who I do a podcast with, and to her, she was just saying that it, like, if she ever watches a documentary that she's really excited about, anytime she tries to convey that excitement to somebody and like tell them what it's about,
yeah,
it just ends up in like a stupid, like a muddled mess of like, just fucking watch it. I don't know, it's good. Like, I can't say it, but
especially, I feel like if it's like I haven't been on the receiving end of any of that, but I feel like if I tried to explain, like, especially if it's about a conspiracy theory type thing, or it's like something that challenges like cultural wisdom, you like get really defensive and like trying to over explain all the evidence there is.
Yeah.
Like, no, the Loch Ness Monster, it is real. Yeah. Like, they have the footage.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So yeah, it was her idea, and then she said, "Hey, do you want to do this with me?" And I was like, "Yeah, let's do it."
Yeah.
And then we started doing that.
So. What's your favorite one you watched so far?
My favorite documentary,
or at least on the for the show.
For the show,
or in general, either way.
Okay. One that we're recording later today, that we haven't even done the episode for yet, uh-huh. but that I love the documentary, is An Honest Liar.
I haven't heard of that one. What's it about?
It's about James Randi. Do you know James Randi?
Uh-uh.
Okay.
Tell me more.
Okay. he's basically like this sort of... almost like Houdini version 2.0.
Oh, you know, I think I maybe have heard of this guy. He's like a social psych... like it's like social psychology type stuff, right?
Kind of. But he started his career as a magician and an escape artist, and he did that, and he got, like, pretty famous doing that. And then he has since, like, the last 30, 40 years or whatever... really dedicated his life to more to like debunking people who claim that they really have these powers.
Oh, okay.
So basically like the same arc of Houdini who did
I wasn't
that.
Aware about that about Houdini either.
Yeah. Later in life he ended up doing a lot of like debunking people of like, you guys, I do this professionally. I see what he's doing to you.
Like, yeah.
Revealing their tricks. But yeah, James Randi had like a lot of high profile ones, like publicly exposing Peter Popoff on Johnny Carson. He was like an evangelist. This ties in.
Okay, yeah.
He was a huge televangelist, making like millions and millions of dollars.
Right. Like a good servant of the Lord.
Yeah. As any good servant of the Lord does. And then he brought in a private investigator, because what his suspicion was is like he and this other guy, this other magician, Banachek, mm-hmm. is the guy, that's his performance name anyway, mm-hmm. They went in and they were watching this guy because they're like, I mean, he clearly doesn't have these powers, so they're trying to figure out what happened. And then Banachek looks at the guy and then he turns to James Randi and he said, you know, for a guy that can heal people miraculously with the power of the Lord, why is he wearing a hearing aid? And they're like, oh, he's getting radio transmissions.
Yeah.
And so then they brought in like this private investigator.
Oh,
who brought
shit.
In like his scanner, and like he like got in backstage and stuff. And he found the frequency that Peter Popoff's wife was broadcasting to him from.
Oh, wow.
And it turns out, you know, people would like fill out their prayer cards like out in the lobby or whatever.
Yeah.
And that had all of their information on it.
Oh, my God.
So his wife was just reading the prayer cards and broadcasting it to him, so it looked like he miraculously knew everybody's stories.
Holy shit. That's like a sociopathic Bonnie and Clyde.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so then James Randi went on Johnny Carson, and then he was just showing this footage of Peter Popoff supposedly miraculously healing people.
Yeah.
And he says, all right, now let's watch this footage with the audio that we recorded. And it just has his wife like speaking to him.
Oh my God! How have I never seen this before? That sounds incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
so what kind of healing does it look like? Like what's happening? Like,
I mean,
it's like, oh, you're depressed, and I know the right thing to cheer you up.
No. I mean, it's like the classic, you know, high energy laying of the hands of. You know, like screaming and, oh, you can't walk. You are now healed. And like this guy's like kind of hobbling along. It's like, oh my God, I'm walking. And it's
wow.
Like,
power of the placebo effect, I guess.
Or probably just the power of adrenaline. And it's, you know, like an hour later, you probably can't walk anymore, you know?
Oh, that's interesting to think about. Like if you are like, let's say.
Or it was like a guy who's like, oh, I'm finally walking pain free. And it's like, adrenaline can mask pain for a while.
Yeah, that's interesting thinking about what is happening if you are in that audience, like this hobbled guy, and you are in legit physical pain, but then you also legit believe that you're about to be healed. I guess it is like adrenaline that's like, lets you move. And then it's so weird to like imagine being that guy.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's, you know, it's just like a mom pulling a car off their kid or something, you know.
Yeah, well, it's like a hypnosis type thing.
Yeah,
apparently
people who fall under hypnosis. Have you ever fallen under hypnosis?
No.
No, I haven't either. But apparently it's
I'm just too strong for it.
have they tried? They have tried.
Every day they try to get me.
But you have to, like, part of it, I think, is what I've heard is, like, they... hypnotists like select people who are already willing and primed, ready to believe, and it's like that they that's sort of like 50% of the battle is just somebody who like wants to believe.
Yeah I've seen like a stage hypnosis show before.
Uh-huh.
And that was like it was like welcome weekend to like freshman year of college or something.
Yeah.
And it, you know, it's just like an entertainment thing. Yeah. But they would pull up 10, 12 people and then try to just, and it's like whoever just didn't fall under it, they were just like, all right, you can go back down. And, you know, because yeah. It's like, it's just not going to work all the time.
Yeah, that's so funny.
Yeah.
It's like, it's almost like this guy, Peter Popoff, like if yeah. he is basically a hypnotist who's trying to tell you that it's holy, but yeah. he's doing like hypnotizing.
Yeah.
You know, if only yeah. we could just be like, hey, everybody, like, I'm just going to play heal you, but like, you know, you could be healed if you, like, really believe it.
Right.
For an hour.
Yeah, right. So, but it's like, but also a lot of it, when you're watching it, is like, he's doing things like, and God is burning the tumors out of your kidneys! And it's like, but he's not. He's not doing that, and it's dangerous for you to say that he is.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I don't know, it's just, it's so weird to me thinking about, yeah, the power of just belief in and of itself. Even belief that we know contradicts facts and yet has some kind of effect. Now, mm-hmm. you grew up, so you didn't grow up in that kind of, like, evangelical church, did you?
No, I grew up Lutheran, which is sort of like the Tab Cola of religion. It's just...
Yeah, it's maybe Tab Cola, maybe, like, I don't know. It's like, it's classic. It's certainly classic. Isn't the original Protestant?
Yeah, I mean, it's that adds up. Martin yeah. Luther, Lutheranism.
Yeah.
It's certainly, at least my brand of it growing up is certainly much more watered down than Martin Luther was.
Yeah, yeah. Did you also go to like a Lutheran high school?
I did. I went to a Lutheran high school and middle school, so 7 years.
What now? I've had a lot of people on the show that have been in Catholic schools. I'm just curious if what is like how much of religion is involved in, like how much Lutheranism is in right. a Lutheran high school?
Well, we had chapel every day, mm-hmm. Which it wasn't that long. It was like, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes, and then
just in and out.
Right, yeah.
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 Like, just take attendance. Yeah.
Do you believe? Do you believe? Do you believe? All right, great. Get out of here.
Yeah.
But then every couple of weeks we would have what we called a C schedule, which was like an hour-long chapel. Mm. And then all of the classes were like 5 or 10 minutes shorter.
Gotcha. And are most people there, is it mostly kids that are like with Lutheran parents, or is it a mix of like some people who are just like, oh, is this a good school, so we'll like send you there type thing? Or
yeah, the reason I went is because, my brother and I both went through public elementary school, and that was fine. And mm-hmm. then my brother went to the public middle school for a year, and he just hated it, and it was like a terrible experience.
Huh.
So then that's when my parents sent him to that school.
Mm-hmm.
And then for me, they were like, I don't know, maybe it'd be fine, but we're just going to send you to this school
because yeah.
it seems
better.
Better.
Yeah.
So we had chapel every day. We had religion class, but that seemed like pretty soft. It was sort of almost like soft. Sunday school type shit. Like, it wasn't like religious.
Oh, and they're like just lobbing you like spiritual softballs. Like,
it was a lot of,
you yeah. should love each other, right?
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. Of, yeah. I feel like every now and then, like once a year, they would try to get into something that felt deep, but then they would just address it at a very surface level.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Of like, why is there suffering in the world? And it's like, because God's a mystery. And it's oh, great. We didn't really...
Yeah. Did you go to youth group on top of this? Like a separate youth group or anything? Or
not really. I mean, I did, you know, like the confirmation stuff for a few years and
gotcha.
Got confirmed.
Because I just remember, I did youth group. I didn't go to... I went to public schools. And my dad was a pastor, so I got a lot of Jesus in anyway. Mm-hmm. But
I did a couple mission trips too.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I did as well back in the day.
Yeah.
But I remember, like, yeah, every now and then you'd have a lesson that would sort of push the boundary. Like, maybe it'd be like a little more hippy dippy, like mystical, like type stuff, which I'm into. But like, you could always feel a little bit of resistance from like other people. Like, come on, let's go back to the easy stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, some people are not in. Some people in youth group, and I'm sure in the same in like a Lutheran high school, they're not in it to get deep into God. Like, they don't want that.
Right. Yeah. 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 I think a lot of people just wanted the. I'd say myself too for a while until I actually sat down and really considered my thoughts on everything. Mm-hmm. But that wasn't until like late college.
Huh.
But yeah, I'd say for myself too, like in high school, it was just, you know, that's what I was born into. So it's like, does God exist? Yeah, of course God exists.
Right. Yeah, it's not a question. And your parents were on that same vein too? Were they Lutheran or?
Yeah. Yeah, they're both still Lutheran. I'm curious, like, what their actual beliefs are. I don't know. Maybe I need to, like, actually talk to them about it.
Yeah, I don't.
But also, like, when I see them, like, 4 days a year, it's like, am I going to dedicate that much time to this?
Totally, man. I feel the same way with my parents, and it's, despite, I don't know, I guess they can listen to this podcast if they want to check in on what I think. But it's, you said late in college is when you started. Mm-hmm. Do you remember, like, a specific moment, or, like, was it just a slow decline into hedonism?
It was senior year. I remember the very start of it. This is tying all full circle. Was my brother was just like, hey, have you seen, like, this... you just, like, showed me, like, a YouTube video. He was like, I don't know, it was, like, this fucking cool old guy. And I was just, like this speech that he gave, or, like, this presentation or whatever.
Yeah.
And it was James Randi. And I'd never heard of James Randi before.
Oh.
And he's not, like, necessarily an outspoken, like, atheism or anything like that. But that ends up tying in quite a bit with, like, scientific skepticism and debunking kind of stuff.
Right, right.
So he wasn't necessarily talking about that, but he was, I think, talking about, you know, like, homeopathy is nonsense, and, like, probably anti-vaxxers and, like, other sorts of urban legends and stuff that people believe in, that he was just, you know, explaining sort of like this is kind of why people believe it, but this is also why it's
lame.
Yeah, clearly, like, manufactured by people and not true.
Yeah.
And then I started, like, getting into more of that type of world outside of just him.
Mm, yeah.
And, like, listening to podcasts and stuff, and then more of those people were sort of touching on atheism.
Yeah, yeah.
And then that's when I was... And then for a while I was like, okay, no, I'm into all this other stuff, but, you know, I'm still Christian. And then after a while I was like, but why is that the one thing that is, like... exempted from this? Yeah. Why is that the one thing that's exempted from this critical thought that I like to put into everything else? You know?
Right, right, yeah.
And so then I think my thought process was one that was sort of that's a very classic one for apostates, which was just that, like, the only reason I'm Christian is because I was born to these people at this time in this place.
Mm-hmm.
If I was born in the Middle East, I'd be Muslim.
Right.
If I was born in India, I might be Hindu.
Mm-hmm.
And so then to me, it was like, okay, so I don't have a good reason to be Christian.
Yeah, man.
And if I'm not Christian, I don't have a better reason to be another religion.
Yeah.
And that was, I think, the most convincing thing to me. Mm-hmm. More so than, I think, the other classic thing, which is, if God is all-knowing, all-powerful, I don't know, all that.
Problem of evil.
Right, the problem of evil. Because that's sort of, you know, like a philosophical thing, whereas, like, the one, to me, of, like, being born at a certain time in a certain place is, like, very concrete of, like, this is so just, like, a product of my environment.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not necessarily rooted in any good reason for me to believe this.
Dude, that was, like, that's very, very... very similar to how I just remember having those same exact thoughts. I mean, I studied the Bible in college, like, for, like, the Old Testament in the fall, New Testament in the spring of my, like, sophomore year, I believe. yeah, and I remember having a feeling like, oh, right. Now that I realize that this is, or like I'm learning about like the history of the document that is the Bible and like all the political type of edits and redactions and things left out and mm-hmm. the earliest gospels written like 30 years after Jesus died, that type of thing, and just realizing, you know, even if a lot of it's true, it's probably not all literally true. And I remember feeling like, yeah, there's no, I've just done this by default.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Do you believe that Jesus was a historical figure?
I think so. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know a lot of people feel very strongly that yes, and some people feel strongly no. I tend to think he was a figure,
mm-hmm.
and probably a great mystic, like of his time, of like essentially he's a Jewish mystic. If you believe in a literal, or if you believe in the historical figure of Jesus, he was just a Jew that was like, no, we are all one. In my opinion, there's some people that have, I've gone down a lot of rabbit holes with this before and believe different things, but I remember Alan Watts, who's is a great kind of Eastern historian, Eastern mm-hmm. philosophy historian, talked about how the language in one of Jesus's like teachings in the Bible, it would, like the Greek, when he calls himself like the Son of God, it could also be interpreted to say, I am a son of God, and so you are all also children of God. And not in the sense that he's not some special exalted figure. He wasn't maybe even trying to say that himself. He was just trying to say, like, no, we are all children of the same divine source.
Right.
And he's like, it's he probably used father in quotation marks too, like in air quotes. Yeah. You know, my father. Yeah. You know? That's how I
like to think he did it as an Austin Powers impression. My faja.
My faja.
And everyone's like, we don't know what that is yet.
He's like,
just like doing Borat and shit. That's what I like to think Jesus was.
Just a long Borat impersonation.
Yeah. It's actually just did like a lot of like late 90s, early 2000s comedy references.
Yeah. Oh, it's actually,
he did like the Family Guy Peter Griffin, like, like Jesus was just way into that.
Maybe, yeah, that Sacha Baron Cohen, he's actually 2000 plus years old. This is the longest con.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think?
This is also part of Zeitgeist, which Tom Sibley was our guest, and I think that was perfect because he's like the kind of guy that he's way into that movie.
Uh-huh.
And I am like way the opposite.
Yeah.
But to me, like the whole first third of that movie basically is about the Christ myth theory.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that is like the most plausible thing that he talks about. I don't know in the way that, like, I don't know. I haven't put the time in to like research it really yet. Like,
yeah.
I do have this book called The Case for Christ, which basically lays out the argument. You've heard of it or read it?
No.
Okay. Basically just like lays out the case for why Jesus did exist. And then I was going to, like, get a book that's the opposite and just, like, read them both and be like, you know, consider both. But I just haven't gotten around to doing that yet.
Sure,
I just bought one half of the two books and read neither.
Right. Sounds like my average Amazon purchasing experience.
Yeah. It seems like the most plausible thing that they discuss in that movie of conspiracy theories that I don't know. But I mean, it would seem plausible that, like, you know, they discuss that, like, the story of Jesus, like, elements of it have been seen in religions before.
And right.
Like,
right.
It makes sense to me that a religion at a certain time in a certain place would be influenced by other religions that exist in that time and place.
Totally.
But that doesn't mean that Jesus didn't exist.
Right. They could have just added on these little traditions, these little stories onto this existing, the guy that they know was real.
Right. Because those were cultural like traditions that existed. And then, like you were talking about, like how the Gospels didn't get written until decades after he died, mostly.
Yeah, yeah.
That like, they probably just could have just snuck their way into that story.
Totally, you know? Through oral tradition. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And like, just from like vaguely scanning the Wikipedia about the Christ myth theory, it sort of sounds like the idea that Jesus didn't exist is more of an outlier to biblical scholars.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. So, to me, like, I you know, obviously you don't want to just accept somebody on an argument of authority, but having not done the research myself, I'm right. more likely to defer to the general consensus of the experts.
Well, and that's one thing is, like, I took the class I took my religious studies class from is taught by this guy, Dr. Bart Ehrman, who's been on Daily Show and stuff. He's been on, like, his history channel.
Oh, I have, like, three of his books.
Yeah, you know, he's fantastic. Yeah, he's a great professor, really nice guy, too. And his story, for those of you who don't know, is he's evangelical. For, like, as an evangelical pastor, went to, like, Wheaton College, is a very Christian college in Chicago, to become minister. And then he sort of came to a similar conclusion once he started studying the history of the Bible. And but he's married to an Episcopalian, and they're, like, another professor who he's like, she's smarter than me. And but he's like, he tends to be an atheist, like, agnostic type guy. But, like, so he has every reason to be like, yeah, the historical Jesus definitely didn't exist, but he says all the evidence sort of does point towards there being a historical Jesus, and that, yeah, maybe, you know, if you're, like, trying to sell your new religion, your new hip religion, maybe you add a couple of more, you add a little more color to the stories, you add maybe you tie in some stuff that you know has worked in other religions,
right? Yeah, because it also, like, just that, like, tying in those things to this religion, to me also makes sense that, like, when you're trying to sell this religion as a new religion to other people,
yeah,
that it would make those people feel more comfortable if they recognize things from their other religions that they're converting from, you know?
Totally. And, you know, this is like, and some people, I think there's, like, I don't know, coming from more or less believing in the literal truth of the Bible, not 100%, but more or less, I believe that for a long time. I think that's what, like, when I first felt that maybe it wasn't literally true, that's when you feel, I don't know, I felt, like, betrayed a little bit, or felt like, oh, I had just been living a lie type deal. But now, I don't know, even if it's not literally true, I think it's like a good, just like a good fiction story. There's truth in fiction that doesn't mean it has to be real. And maybe, like, that's, if we needed to get some window dressing to get these ideas off the ground, these great ideas of, no, love your neighbor regardless, love your enemy too, love everybody, be generous, you know, like, be like a child, don't be like a fucking stuck up like holier than thou person,
all of that. And then also, let's just tack on Revelations just for fun.
Right, well, yeah, well, that's the other, I'm just saying, well,
but no, I know what you
I'm
mean.
I'm not going to defend all of the Bible. Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, if we need to get the idea of Jesus off the ground as a legitimate movement, because apparently he, I don't know, even I think even a lot of Christians and, like, Christian historians, the Christian authors would say, like, Jesus wasn't, like, so super popular even while he was alive. It wasn't until after it. Like, yeah, he had, like, big speeches to some other, like, Galileans and whatnot. But, like, he wasn't, like, regionally known. Like, nobody knew who he was.
Oh, sort of the Bill Hicks of religion, if you will.
Yeah, kind of, right? The Bill Hicks of Judaism. Because, remember, he's, like, he's basically calling out, like, all the Jewish, like, leaders and powerful people being like, no, you guys are full of shit. Yeah. You're trying to control things, and none of that matters. You don't have to do, like, you don't have to be so uptight. It's fine. We're all going to be fine. There's also, like, some... However, like Revelations and I think the Gospel of John tends to be the most, like, oh, the apocalypse is coming. There is a lot of apocalyptic overtones that maybe Jesus did, the historical Jesus maybe have said too, like, oh no, this is, the end times are kind of near, so don't worry about what the Romans are doing.
Yeah. I thought the most shocking part of John was when Jesus said, I am white with blonde hair and blue eyes.
Yeah, that was my favorite part too.
Yeah. Big fan of that part.
Yeah, and I will often hold my hands up to the side.
Yeah,
maybe Jesus was just like a big hand talker.
Like, he just gesticulated a lot.
So it's like, no, see, like, it's, we just, oh man, talk about a bit that doesn't work in the podcast medium. I'm flailing my hands for those at home. So did you
he's very Bernie Sanders.
He kind of was. Yeah. Just kind of one note, like revolutionary.
Yeah. Yeah. With lots of hands and like hair flying all over.
Yeah. And theoretically, the people in the Pharisees couldn't like at first like say that much about him. He's like, well, he's still a good Jew.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's still a good Democrat or whatever, like Bernie. Yeah. But the establishment gets their way.
Oh, something I thought of when we were talking about like Jesus and Jesus. Possibly like the translation kind of messing up him just saying like, I am one of God's sons or something.
Yeah, yeah.
I always thought it was very interesting, and I never totally could wrap my head around it when I was Christian, of when Jesus is in front of Pontius Pilate.
Mm-hmm.
Pontius Pilate is saying, you know, like you are the Son of God, and like Jesus will never just straight up say it.
Right, he never does.
He never will just say,
yeah,
yes, I am. I am the one.
Yeah, true and son why of God. Not?
Yeah, and it's always just like sort of you are who says it, and he like he just doesn't deny it.
Right, if you say so.
Yeah,
yeah, or he asks another question back.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, he's very good at that.
I always thought that was. I never could wrap my mind around. What was going on there?
Yeah, really. Like, why would he not say it? I'm trying to even think of what the, like, the church's sort of given reason for that is. I don't even remember. That's an interesting, like, little spot. I might have mm-hmm. to look that up. Like, huh. Because it seems like you would be, like, if you look at, like, Islam, like, Muhammad, maybe I'm speaking way out of turn here because I don't know firsthand. I have a copy of the Quran, but yeah. I haven't read it. I've read like the first 30 pages.
Okay.
Another Amazon purchase that I was like, man, I will get through it one day. But I'm pretty sure I feel like there's like Muhammad didn't deny being a messenger of God.
Mm-hmm.
Like he was like, no, I'm speaking. I know that part of the Quran. It's like, it's all like his literal like translation of like things that he said and written. Like had and wrote, somebody else is gonna be like, no, it wasn't.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just seems like it did seem odd for a Messiah to be like,
maybe I don't know. Maybe yes, maybe no.
Interesting perspective.
Yeah, right.
So when you started stopping believing in God,
sure.
Was there friction with your family at all, or is it?
I haven't talked to any of my family except my brother about it.
Uh-huh.
And he also has left the church, if you will.
Sure, yeah.
And at this point, it's like my grandparents are like 89 and like 86. It's like I think I can just like
run the clock out
on them.
Oh no. Yeah, I mean,
you know,
no, I totally get it. I feel very uncomfortable talking to my grandparents about it.
Yeah, I just don't feel the need to like add that stress onto them for no reason at the end of their lives.
Totally.
And sort of in my head, it's like maybe after they go, maybe I'll talk to my parents.
Yeah.
Because I am curious what they do and don't believe.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what's interesting. I have no idea what your parents are like. I do think maybe there's like, maybe my parents were less literalist than they let on. Like, maybe they're also like, oh, yeah, there's a lot of truth. Like, the metaphor of everything is cool. Like, that's what we're here for.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But because it's the literalism that makes me bristle a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, my parents are definitely, like, not literalists, and they're very liberal and progressive and everything.
Yeah.
But especially my dad, I'm very curious what his beliefs are, because I've taken some books like from his shelf, like well, actually, The Case for Christ, now that I think about it, I didn't buy that book. I took it from my dad.
Oh, yeah.
That was one of his, and then the other one was Finding Darwin's God.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with that one?
Mm-mm.
It's by Francis something.
Scott Key. That's the only Francis I know.
That is the one.
Yeah.
The other one I know is like Francis Carmont, who's like a UFC fighter. Mm-hmm. So it could also be from him.
Interesting thoughts on God, that guy.
It's God. I forget what his job is. He's some sort of. He's a scientist, like some sort of high profile scientist.
Mm-hmm.
who is also religious, and the book is basically about like reconciling those things.
Yeah, yeah. I think a lot of those guys tend to not be super literalist.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And so it's that, and then also just an experience that my dad had recounted at the Christmas dinner table one year. Which really makes me wonder what his beliefs are, which was that a couple years ago he had a heart valve replacement and an aortic aneurysm surgery to fix that.
Mm-hmm.
And the surgery went fine, but then when they were pulling out one of his chest tubes, the nurse like didn't like first snip the like the stitches.
Yeah.
And it caused internal bleeding, and he had a like a minor stroke and a cardiac arrest.
Yeah.
And when he was recounting this story around the Christmas dinner table with, I don't know, probably 15 relatives or so.
Uh-huh.
And he was saying, the only way I can say what it was like is that I didn't look into the abyss. I was inside the abyss, and it was the darkest, coldest nothing I've ever experienced.
Wow.
And there were no angels and no relatives. There was no light. There was nothing. And then we were just at the dinner table like, oh my God, what? And then yeah. He was like, and so that's why I want to hold on to every bit of life that I possibly can.
Huh.
Because my uncle, like his brother, had said something about the, something, you know, along the idea of just cavalierly saying like, yeah, you know, you want to live like a long life, but like, I don't want to get too old, you know? And then my dad was like, hold on.
Yeah.
Hold on. So that even that, like, I don't put too much weight in as far as like, I also wouldn't put that, I don't put that much weight in like a kid who saw heaven, you know?
Uh-huh.
So I don't necessarily think that that has that much weight, but as far as like how that affected his beliefs.
Yeah.
And because it, when I heard that, it's like, it sounds like you don't believe in God.
Yeah. Did you notice a change, like, in how he acted after that? I mean, I guess you're not seeing him that much. Like, you're not seeing day-to-day him. You're probably only seeing holiday him, like I am with my parents.
Right, yeah. Yeah. So, not really. Not that I've noticed.
Yeah. It's just interesting, because I think a lot of people, that might sound, like, bleak to a lot of people who, I don't know, there's, like, something about, I think, believing in an afterlife that runs the risk of, running the clock out on your own life. Just be like, I'll just be a decent, like, I'm not going to take any risks. I'm not going to, like, you know, live, I don't know.
Absolutely.
That's too passionately.
Yeah, that's honestly.
Just make it.
100%, that's why I started comedy.
Yeah,
is that this all, it all leads into each other. Of
fucking A, man.
Once I gave up all those religious beliefs, something I had never realized is that I was just living my life with the assumption of an afterlife.
Mm-hmm.
And when I really considered that there is no afterlife, and like, if this really is all there is,
mm-hmm.
if I want to do something, it has to happen right now.
Yeah. Fucking A, man. I mean, that's what I kind of came to, too. And, you know, it's really, maybe there is an afterlife, just, and I just have to say maybe, because there's just nobody's ever come back. Like, nobody's ever told us one way or the other. Like, we'll just never know mm-hmm. for sure. I tend to think it's lights out, over type mm-hmm. thing. But
yeah.
It does, like, once, I don't know, maybe there was a period where that felt bleaker to me. And I, too, like, in a vacuum of that, started doing comedy around, like, shortly after college. But, like, it is that, it makes everything precious so much more here and now. It makes me live life more urgently,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I don't want to run the clock out.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to just coast along, play. I mean, are you a football fan?
I watch it a little, basketball.
Yeah. I mean, that's like when you're running the clock out, you know, you're just like, just playing it safe, just playing it. Cause, and I mean, I don't know, some people enjoy that and they don't want anything grandiose. And I'm not saying comedy specifically has to be your thing at all. Cause it's,
I'm saying that.
It sounded like you were saying that.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. But yeah, so you feel at all? Does that resonate at all with you? Or?
Yeah, 100%. That's definitely why I started it, because it was after after undergrad. It was really like towards the end of senior year that I really started coming to these conclusions for myself anyway. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I stopped praying to do well on tests.
Ooh.
Yeah. And that was in between when I took the MCAT and when I got my MCAT scores back.
Uh-huh.
And I remember I stopped praying in that time.
Uh-huh.
And I got my MCAT scores back and I did like significantly better than I thought I did. And I was like, oh, this doesn't fucking matter. I wasn't doing anything.
Why is that? I don't know why that's so funny to me.
I know yeah. It is, but it's just like one of those things. Like, of course, like, yeah, no, I just like I did well because like instead of going home for a month over Christmas break, like I stayed on campus as the only person there and just studied for a month. Like that's why I did well. It's not because I fucking prayed.
Right. But it's also not because you didn't pray either, right? Or I'm saying, like, it's not like the absence of prayer boosted you other than maybe right. You studied for an extra, like, couple minutes.
Yeah. Oh, well, no. That was after I had taken it. So I'd already done all the studying and all that, and I was still religious during that time.
Oh, then, like praying for the results to come
right,
back.
Right. There's like a month lag time or whatever in between taking it and
right.
getting the results.
Right.
And that's where it stopped. And it was like, that's because I did the prep work. It's not because I was praying.
Yeah. Or another, maybe all those prayers from those daily prayers from high school just added up, and you just use some of that bankroll. Yeah.
Or maybe my test had gotten graded like in those first 2 weeks,
right?
And then like I had already done well, and when I stopped praying, God was just like, "Oh fuck, oh, he got me!
It's out of my hands now.
Yeah.
I'm helpless.
I God am helpless about this test score."
I always did wonder about even when I believed. I wondered about the mechanics of like, yeah, does it change like in the mail? Like what happened? when is the intervention
right.
coming in?
Yeah.
That's so funny.
So, yeah, that was then end of senior year. And then I was taking a year off while I was applying to med schools. And then I realized, like, if I don't do comedy now, if I don't try it now,
mm-hmm.
I'm for sure not going to have time in med school.
Yeah.
And so then that's when I started stand-up. And then 10 months later, I moved out to Los Angeles.
Dude, I had such a parallel experience with the law school. I took the LSAT, worked at a law firm for a year, was living at home to save up money for that. Turned out I was going to save up money to move to LA. I didn't even know it because I started doing stand-up while working for the law firm. Could have gone to a decent school, but I was just like, it was uninspiring. I also felt the vacuum of of my existence. And I was like, no, I gotta give this a shot. I gotta see what happens.
Right. Yeah, that's almost exactly what happened. Because I was then, I was like working at a hospital because one, like, I was trying to get into med school. So it's like,
right.
I need to be doing something medically related in this time.
Right.
And the other was like, I can also save up some money in this time. And then it ended up being money to move to Los Angeles.
That's so funny. And we probably moved around the same time to LA, I think. I remember seeing you in my early days out here.
May 2012.
Okay. Yeah. You're like a year after me. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And so it's so funny how like, but yet I didn't know this about you till today,
mm-hmm.
till now.
Yeah.
It's so odd how, like, it's almost like if you have a big, it's like if you take a population of 300 million in America, there's just a certain percentage who are going to, like, have, like, the same conclusions at the same time and all move to LA or New York or Chicago or whatever.
Yeah. It's, you know, just having this discussion almost makes me think, you know, like, the idea of, like, the best basketball player of all time probably never played basketball. And it's like,
yeah. Yeah.
The best comedian of all time probably just stayed Christian.
That's so funny. Yeah, and then he did Christian comedy and that.
or just never did comedy, you know,
yeah,
just
right.
like never felt the vacuum of existence.
Or he became a pastor. I know some funny pastors.
Yeah.
It's weird like when you like, I don't know, I'm sure I know enough Lutherans to believe that there's some cool Lutheran like pastors that you've had before. That they're not all like, we don't, and I don't think any like I grew up Presbyterian, I don't think like I've never thought all Presbyterian ministers had nothing to say or nothing to offer.
Mm-hmm.
It's just stopped being like, I just needed to expand my horizons. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think definitely I don't really, you know, hold a grudge against the religion that I was raised in.
Mm-hmm. Did you for a time?
Not that I held a grudge against it, but I think there was a time when I was probably more of like the outspoken atheist type if somebody was to bring up religion.
Same, yeah.
Yeah, and then I've sort of cooled off on that.
Cooled those since. Jets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although I will say, though, I think just by virtue of the essence of what Christianity is, I think there was still, you know, like some lingering, there's obviously like lingering effects. I think there's like,
totally.
You know, like stuff like shame around sex, I think, is I think as time goes on, you know, fades more and more, but I think that was like a very deep-seated thing for a long time.
Same, man. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like just generalized guilt about, like, for me it was a lot of guilt about having any kind of, like, this is something I don't know, I've thought of tossed and turned about a little bit, like, because I was raised, my parents are very, they're very sweet people, such big sweethearts, and so they taught me, my sister, all growing up, you know, to treat everybody, obviously, as equal, but, like, also, not even just equal, like, really, like, it's like, and it's a mix of like Southern like manners type too. It's basically you're constant deferring to other people, like constant like look out for the needs of others and maybe prioritize them over your own needs to some extent. At least there wasn't an emphasis on like making your own needs a priority, which maybe is unfair to them. I think they were probably just doing the best they could, but like I think that's something that maybe religion and Protestantism specifically. I don't know, it made me, like, I think it channeled into some lower self-esteem for a while, because it's like I wasn't looking out enough for myself.
Yeah, right. Know? But at the same time, there's also a seed of a good idea in there.
100%, because being a selfish prick doesn't help me at all.
Right, yeah.
It just makes me more and more isolated and bummed out and all that shit, and just an asshole to people in general.
Yeah, and then I also wondered, like, how much of this is because of the religion, and then how much of it is just because it's like really hard to raise a kid and like not fuck them up in some way.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's like a ready-made community of people who at least on average are going to be good, decent people. Probably they're at least, we know they're at least trying. They're at least trying to be a good, they're like trying to raise their kids, trying to live their own lives in some kind of like structure of good people, just like what most religions aspire to be.
Right.
Yeah, it's just, shit's hard.
Yeah. I mean, particularly like addressing sex with your kid, like one, not instilling like this overwhelming shame of sex, but then also like not inadvertently like turning them into a sex fiend.
Yeah, like just, yeah.
And just like how did, like the balance of just instilling like a healthy, balanced view of sex, like how the fuck do you do that with a kid?
Right. How do you give like a kid the real pragmatic, like practical, like, well, it's not that you should feel bad about having sex, but there are some consequences that might happen.
Right.
You know, I guess ideally good sex education is that.
Right.
But I don't know, if you grow up in rural communities, it's usually sprinkled in with, like, and you also might not be a good person.
Yeah. was, I was going to say to my parents' credit, but I don't think that's right, is that I literally never had the talk with either of my parents.
I don't really remember one either. I remember, maybe a passing glance at, like, maybe, like, them asking. They gave you the talk in church, right? Okay, good.
Well, I do remember the closest my dad ever gave to giving me the talk. Is that I think we were at like my grandparents' house for Christmas or something, and everybody else had gone to bed, and we were watching, I don't know, whatever the fuck on TV, and then one of those Girls Gone Wild commercials came on.
Oh yeah.
And then he just like looks at it and looks at me, and he's just like, the right time of the night, they look appetizing, but you gotta be careful. All right. And that was it. That was the end. And I was just like, I love that.
Yeah.
What do you imagine I gained from this?
We can't deny our desires.
Right. But he throws in the, you gotta be careful. All right.
I mean, is that even wrong, though? That's like pretty, sound.
No, like, it's spot on, but it's like, what did you think I gained from this?
The older I get, I'm not gonna have kids for a while, but it's at least it's in my radar, just in the sense of, like, I could imagine myself having kids in like 5 to 10 plus years.
Oh, you know what I've noticed more and more is just in recent years that, like, like babies will stare at me more, or like a little kid will say hi to me more. Which like didn't happen when I was like 16, 17, 18, you know?
Yeah.
But I think I'm like old enough now that I look like some of their parents.
Yeah.
Or their parents' friends.
Yeah, you know? we're like men now.
I know. Fuck.
Like legally, socially.
I know. We've technically been men for, well, how old are you?
27.
Okay,
yeah.
I'm 26, almost 27. So we've been men 8, almost 9 years.
Right. At least in the eyes of the law.
But. Right.
And certainly haven't felt like a man. I mean, I don't think this even had to do with my parents or religion per se, but I think there's a widespread delayed sort of adolescence period going on with a lot of people our age.
Definitely, yeah.
Through video games or whatever the multiple reasons.
I don't really even consider my brother as like a man yet. He's like 30.
Right. Well, and conversely, I've always thought of my like parents as being like 45. They're like 50. It's only until recently that I'm like, oh, right, they're starting to get up there a little bit.
Yeah. 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 My parents in my head are always like locked in at the age of like 45 because
exactly.
That's what they were when I was a kid.
Exactly. But they're now always 45. And then now it's like, I don't know. I feel
they're both like 60 plus now, you know?
And I definitely feel more of a, more, I don't know if you call it guilt, but I just feel more of an impulse to be less shitty with like calling and stuff like that.
Oh yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's like, how often do you call your parents?
I'm okay at doing it once a week or so. And then we text and shit in between. Some people are on completely different schedules, and sometimes I don't talk to them for like 3 weeks or whatever, other than an email or a text or something. But, try to check in.
That's so frequent to me. That's like, I'll see my parents for maybe one, maybe 2 weeks a year. It ends up, oftentimes it's been, in like the 4 years I've been here, most years it's been like 2 weeks a year, because like Christmas every year, which I will still go to church with my family,
right,
just to keep up appearances.
Right.
And then usually somebody's getting married in the summer.
Yeah.
And so like a couple times it's been friends back in Fargo, and I'll go back. And then I'll see him then. And then last summer, like, it was my cousin who got married. And then this summer, it's going to be my other cousin getting married. So I'll see them, like, then, too.
Mm-hmm. Do you, when you go back to church, and even though it's just for appearances, I mean, do you get anything out of it?
Not really. No.
Hot bits and material. takes on your hot atheist tapes. Yeah.
Yeah, become an angry atheist again for like a week. At this point, religion to me, like, I always try to think of like the least condescending way to say this, because I don't mean it to be condescending, but I can't figure out a way to phrase it that doesn't sound condescending.
Mm-hmm.
Is that like, when I'm that close to it again and see it again, it's almost like I'm reminded just like, oh yeah, people are still doing this, you know? It's almost like,
yeah,
it's like seeing somebody drink a can of Surge or something, where it's like, whoa, that's still around?
Yeah. Yeah, I think especially living in an LA kind of artistic bubble where not a lot of our friends are doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's churches in LA, lots of churches in LA that people go to. I mean, there's one even like 100 yards from here.
Oh, but, for sure. Yeah, I mean, that's like, like on Sundays, you know, I'll like wake up at noon and like stumble out into the hallway, and like I'll see like the nice family across the hall coming in their seats, and I'm like, oh, did somebody like get fucking married today? Oh shit, yeah. Sunday.
Yeah. Okay, so we're about time to start wrapping things up. Are you aware of the gimmick of this show?
Yeah, I listened to 2 episodes.
Cool. Did we actually follow the gimmick on those? Because sometimes I abandon it.
Yeah,
okay.
On both of them, yeah.
Cool. Well, if you're game, would you like to make up your own religion?
Sure.
Yeah, cool. All right, so this, you know, as silly as it is, it doesn't have to be like, this doesn't have to be your official religion or whatever. It can be, though. What kind of, I don't know, what do you think of, like, of a God structure for religion or whatever you believe it. Because there's some religions that have, like Buddhism, that have no God. Mm-hmm. So that's an option. I mean, do we want a one God, many God, a Greek structure, a Are there like gods for like each role, each little dynamic? No god at all. Ooh, nothingness, the void.
I'm gonna actually try to do this in like the least jokey way possible.
Yes, go for it. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I'd say in my hierarchy of preferences, if I was gonna create a religion, one I would say no god,
mm-hmm.
and then in order of preference, then I would probably go like polytheist, and then I would go monotheist.
Okay.
Because I don't like the idea of the one authority that you have to listen to, and there's no debating even amongst its own peers or anything, you know?
Okay, sure. So let's just go to no god. Go no god. Yeah, okay. Nothing. Whether that's a the nothingness of that. Death. This is so dark. Okay, so what does what kind of, if you were making up your own religion, what kind of overarching ethos or mission statement, like type, what's like the, what would be the point of it for you? Like, what would you like to communicate and what would you like people to take away?
This might be a completely self-defeating religion. A bit almost like, have you ever read Cat's Cradle?
Mm-mm.
Okay. Well, I won't. Okay. But it's like the fake religion in there. Like the first thing is like all religion is a lie, including this one.
Interesting. Is the thing. So it's like I think that's sort of like, I think their Satanism is sort of like modern day Satanism is sort of on that path. I need to do.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I would say my sort of self defeating religion, which is almost sort of like a personal ethos, or like if I was to say that I had a spiritual goal, I don't know if spiritual is the right word, it mm-hmm. would be my goal is to not believe anything, but to accept reality as it is and as the strongest evidence indicates that it is.
Right on, man. Yeah, I mean that's a very, I mean, that's, now we're starting down, like, the Buddhist type path.
Uh-huh.
Because that's, there's, even Buddha used to say, or famously would say, like, yeah, don't believe anything I say just because I said it. Like, just compare it with your reason, and then, mm-hmm. like, go just, yeah, follow what's true.
Yeah. That's, which I also understand that the complete goal of not believing anything is also sort of unattainable, you know, like, I believe that if I give the worker at McDonald's $5.44, he's going to give me a double quarter pounder with cheese, you know?
Yeah, or you believe in, like, the value of some shared social norms or some shared cultural...
Right, but just... But that's, you know, sort of the goal of, of like, don't believe anything just on authority as to the best of your ability.
Cool. So are there any rules in this besides, or is just the rule like don't believe? No, really, don't believe. Any like codes of conduct? Any can we have sex? Can we drink?
Yes. No dancing. Definitely no dancing.
No dancing. No dancing at all. Yeah. Got it.
Codes of conduct, I would say,
or like
that sort of like a general thing about that is like, oh fuck, I just lost it. I mean, I guess kind of the golden rule kind of stuff, but
don't even be a
like
dick.
When, yeah, don't be a dick. But even like, when people like to bring up like the Ten Commandments or something, but like, you know, even the Ten Commandments are good. It's like, but if you read them, they're not that good. Like a lot of them aren't, you know,
yeah.
Like a lot of them are about like, don't believe in other gods or something like
right.
that.
Right. Yeah.
Like,
no other gods before me type thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And it omits stuff like no slaves.
Oh
you know?
Yeah. It so misses it's like, some crucial ones.
Yeah. So it's like, yeah, I don't know, half of them are fine. So let's, yeah.
So we'll take the five commandments. Is there any, would you have any, like, text for this religion? Any kind of common, we can even expand this to be, like, any common piece of art or, like, musical thing or whatever. Is there anything that's, like, revered?
I don't know that there's something that's revered, but I think that there are suggested reading lists.
Awesome, yeah.
Yeah.
What would be on one? The case for Christ. Yeah.
Right. This religion is like just to trick people into being Christian.
Yeah. Don't believe anything on authority, but I want to check this one out.
I'd say there's probably some Bart Ehrman books on there.
Right on. Yep.
I would say that The Demon Haunted World by Carl Sagan is on there.
Cool.
I would say that Flim Flam by James Randi is on there.
Okay.
And then I would say that, it's not reading, but the An Honest Liar is like a suggested watching on the list.
Awesome. Cool. Just like some good, healthy skepticism.
Yeah. I would say that generally, as far as like codes of conduct rules, it's sort of like the same as the rules that they lay out, like, at the beginning of the UCB improv jam. Mm,
yeah.
Of, like, no unwanted touching in bathing suit areas.
Yeah.
And have fun.
Yeah.
But, like, I would say, like, my general philosophy... Fuck, it was right there and I lost it again. It was the same one that I just lost, like, two seconds ago.
Maybe it'll come back.
Yeah,
back around.
I'm sure it will.
If you had to have a... is there a worship service? Is there like a week, a regular, not, we don't have to say weekly, we could say monthly, quarterly, annually, whatever. Is there a regular kind of gathering or meeting where there's some kind of like shared thing going on?
Let's see. Not, again, not in like a required way, but I think... people will tend to sort of, you know, laugh at the idea of like a, like an atheist gathering, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm just like, oh, what are you getting together for? But I think it's very natural for people, like-minded people, to just want to be around other like-minded people, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
It's not like they're getting together to worship the nothing, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I think there would, I think if anything, it'd be more like a Comic-Con kind of thing, more than like a religious gathering.
An atheist Comic-Con?
Yeah. Which actually kind of exists.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What's it called,
It's called The Amazing Meeting, which is by James Randi's, because he's called The Amazing Randi. That was like what he performed under as a magician.
I'm writing that down to look at later.
Yeah, but it happens every year in Vegas, and I want to go. But it's, you know, like they'll get... speakers like Neil deGrasse Tyson was like a keynote speaker, and like Bill Nye, you know, they'll
get
big name people to do it. And you know, it's generally just talking about, you know, like science and skepticism type stuff. So I think it'd be more in that vein of like a Comic-Con of like critical thought.
Cool. Yeah. Well, that sounds cool. So, yeah, just you have booths set up with, like, all sorts of different people. Yeah.
Booths selling, like, upside-down crosses, but then, like, people will, like, flip them right side up and be like, no, you can't do that!
Yeah, laminated sheets of the scientific method on it.
Yeah.
No. Okay, so we kind of have an idea, then, of what our next...
Okay, it's... Ooh, it's right there. God damn it. Why is it like just tempting me? I don't know why it's like not even that deep of a thought. Oh, it's if like the idea of like if nothing matters kind of thing.
Yeah.
So a lot of people think of it in the way of like if nothing matters, why would I be good? You know.
Right. Right. Where's your morality come from?
Right. Which to me, the way I think of it is that. And the way I'm saying is like, I'm unique this way. It's like, if nothing ultimately matters, if there's no end reward, the only thing that can ever even possibly have a hint of mattering is what's happening right now.
Yeah.
So just be the best person that you can now and like add to the overall good of the world as much as you can now.
Yeah.
Because it's the only thing you can do.
There's no copping out and saying, well, this person will be in heaven, so it doesn't matter what I do now.
Right. There's no going to confession and being forgiven of your sins.
Yeah, like, whew.
Yeah, there's no just washing your hands of it, you know?
Yeah. Okay.
It's, Yeah, so it's just putting that idea in as like the code of conduct of like,
there we go.
This if this is all we have, it is 100% on us to make this the best we can.
Right on.
So contribute to that as much as you can.
Cool.
I don't know why that escaped me three times.
Well, I'm glad we got it in. It's a nice unifying. It felt like we were missing something.
Yeah.
Now it doesn't feel like that.
Yeah. It sort of gives the overall ethos of this.
Yeah.
Self-defeating non-religion religion.
Yeah. So we have, and we kind of already, the next aspect would be community. What does it look like? But we kind of already have that idea. Skeptics.
Mm.
Yeah. Everybody from an angry atheist to like a pretty chill atheist.
Yeah. That huge swap.
Yeah. And what do we, any, at this Comic-Con, do we have any kind of like youth group happening or any kind of like separate youth area? Is there like a Sunday school version during this atheist Comic-Con?
Oh, that's interesting. I hadn't considered that.
Like, you know how, yeah, you know, like, usually kids will just, like, go off to, like, a play place or something. But you're like, but this time, we're going to teach you a little bit of something about skepticism.
I think there would be. I think there would have to be. I think,
Yeah, because honestly, they would be bored by a lot of the lectures. I mean, it's like, is an 8-year-old sitting through a Neil deGrasse Tyson lecture? Probably not.
No, certainly not, no.
Yeah.
That's
what Bill Nye is great for, though.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although his lectures these days become more and more adult. Right.
But, you know, back in the day, he was basically, almost a youth pastor for critical thought.
Oh my God. What an amazing way to describe 90s Bill Nye.
Fucking A.
Yeah.
That's how it felt. He was, because he didn't really have a direct message. He was just hinting at it. Like,
Yeah, he really was. Yeah, I think it would be, man, but, like, how do you not become, like, the, like, sort of, like...
The thing you hate, right?
That, but, like, how do you not do it, like, that's so lame? Like, how do you not be...
Oh, yeah.
...the VeggieTales or the Christian Rock of this, you know?
I don't know, man. We all love Bill Nye. We didn't think it was lame.
That's
science
true.
Rules.
Yeah.
As we heard every theme song.
Yeah.
Science rules.
Yeah, I think you show like a probably like cool demonstrations, you know, the way he would.
Yeah, and there, I think even kids could sort of pick up on the self-awareness of a little bit of like even like in that theme song, it's like so over the top. Like Bill, not like it's, and then like science rules. Like that's so, there's a level of self like deprecation to that.
Uh-huh.
That thing maybe we picked up on as kids. It's not like trying to be like, hey kids, like this. It's like, yeah, this is a fun, this is fun shit.
For the longest time when I was a kid, that show, I thought his name was Bill I. Because at the end when they're saying, you know, when they're like doing the theme song,
uh-huh.
I don't know if you remember this, but like the whole, I think it's like the left side of the screen, you know, where they would like show the panel, like the whole background was like a bunch of little like eyes.
Oh yeah, you're right.
Yeah,
Bill I the science guy.
So I thought it was Bill I the science guy.
Gotcha. Well, he can be the youth pastor for this.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it is a Bill Nye style presentation going on.
Tight.
For the kids.
Tight. And finally, do we have any aspect of this that's going to be evangelical or any kind of outreach? You said you did, I consider also mission work to be in a similar vein, and you said you did mission work earlier, and I did some too.
Mm-hmm.
Would you do, our mission trips in play, like skeptical mission trips?
I think there are certainly public debates in the way that Bill Nye did that high profile one with the guy from the Creation Museum.
Yeah. And that's the evangelism, it's public debate.
Yeah. I think there's definitely that, like, well, first off, I think, like, a lot of the high-profile atheists I've kind of split feelings on, you know, guys like Christopher Hitchens, Richard Dawkins.
Same
I think there's very good things.
Yeah.
And then things that it's like, oh, I don't know where you're going with this.
Right.
But I do think that those public debates are important. Like, I don't know if you've watched many...
I used to. It's been a while.
Yeah, like in my
atheist infancy, I used to watch like a lot of them.
And you're like, see?
yeah, in my bedroom to nobody.
Yeah, yeah.
But there was one that I remember that was, is the church generally a force for good? Mm-hmm. And there was like a, I don't remember who the people from the church was. There was like a bishop and a, I don't remember who else. Mm-hmm. And then the two people arguing against were Christopher Hitchens and Stephen Fry. Mm-hmm. And I remember they pulled the audience before and after, and there was like a huge swing like against the church by the end.
Uh-huh.
and like that was so illustrative to me of like I think these debates really do have a significant effect on at least the kind of people that would seek it out.
Yeah.
I think like if you showed it to, you know, somebody like a born again Christian, they're not going to be swayed. But like I think the people that are the type of people that are seeking this out and like are sort of, you know, on the fence, mm-hmm. I think it is an important thing for.
Cool. So that's it. Yeah.
Great.
That's it. Do we have a title of it? Titles are always the hardest part.
Oh man. The Church of Reality.
There we go. Yeah.
Has anybody taken that yet?
No, they haven't.
Okay.
There's Scientology is also available.
I know, that's a very tricky title.
Very tricky.
They get you where it's like it sounds like science.
Yeah, people will start showing up to Scientology and be like, oh, where's the Church of Reality? I thought, Church of Reality works.
Mm-hmm.
It's, I mean, that's what you're worshiping after all in this.
Yeah.
Cool, man. Well, thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah, this was fun. This was great.
This was great.
Yeah.
Well, that's the show, y'all. Once again, thanks to Luke Jensen for coming out. Check out What Did You Learn on iTunes and Stitcher. Check out Hush Money Sketch on YouTube and Funny or Die. And check out yourselves because you're pretty fucking awesome. And love you guys. Please subscribe, rate, and review if you dig. And love you. Bye.
What's a Creative Podcast Network?